That's our title. It's not the same as in the program. And I'm going to be going quite fast through this program, so bear with me. You can download this, or you can send me an email, and I'll be glad to respond. We started out with just a few persons, but over time, during the summer, we got quite a few contributors, and so I have used material from quite a few people on several different topics. And so the topics are listed a little bit farther down. Many of these were micrographs for cold stage scanning electron microscopy, Ronald Ochoa and Gary Bauman in Washington, D.C. And some of the other SEM images have been prepared by low voltage, live material under low voltage SEMs, or Ripka used what he says the micrographs were taken by his rapid procedure. But I'm not going to spend much time on our preparations. You can read more about those if need be. But I'm going to cover several topics in this presentation. I have 66 slides in 20 minutes, so I'll try to go through as carefully as I can, but expeditiously. And the first topic is muscle contractions in the area of phyoidea. This morning we had an interesting paper on the matter. What was that family? Say it loud. Okay, I can't say it. I work with hairy phyids. I'm sorry, I'm not even going to try. But these mites look very similar to the area phyids in many respects. And muscles are contracting the opisthosoma, and you can see the twisting of the body as a result. And they have very powerful muscles. And Nuzzacci was the first to describe muscles in area phyoid mites. He did this in Italy. And this is one of his drawings. It's from the 1996 book on area phyoidea. And really a tremendous number of muscles. And I have not tried to compare these with muscles in maggots, but they are probably quite similar in many respects. And I think area phyids can act like maggots. Now, how many of you have had a handful of maggots in your hand? And you can feel them squeezing down between your fingers. You can't stop them. It's incredible how powerful they are. And so this musculature gives them quite an advantage, like a maggot. I teach forensic entomology, so I've done it many times. I used to teach. I'm retired now. But this is some more muscles. These were by Valery Shevchenko, and he had two or three different pages. I like this one here. He took the dorsal part of the body. It's on the right side, and the ventral side of the body is on the left. And he was trying to estimate the numbers of segments in an area phyoid, starting at the shield, segments one. Oops, I didn't mean to click it. I'll go back. One up here at the top, coming all the way down to the very bottom, the caudal lobe, number 13. And the navicularis have a caudal lobe that's similar to what we see in area phyoids, which I think is interesting. And this is a portrayal of the muscles that specifically cover contraction of the muscles to the genital cover flap, open the cover flap like so, to allow picking up spermatophores or laying of eggs by the female. And we'll have more to say about that a little farther on. Philip sent me this one, Philip Chepirikov. He's sitting right over here, Philip. I wonder if the musculature is going to be the same in this mite, or have they added more muscles? And then it would be interesting to look at the nematolichids to see if they have similar musculature to the area phyoids, or are they just strictly hydrostatic pressure? And here's another mite that's got muscle contractions on the body, female in a laminar groove on the wheat plant. Close-up of the prodorsum of the mite. And this is the tail end of the mite, and the anal lobe is right over here. This is recorded, so this will show the anal lobes. And another view of the dorsal terminal opisthosoma and muscle contractions. And this is a male wheat curl mite showing the muscle contractions around these areas, lateral sides of the male genitalia. And I'll have another slide of this a little farther on in the talk. And this is female Tosicella trying to free herself from the black dot that Gary Bauman and Ron Ochoa use. They tack these things down after they're frozen in liquid nitrogen, or prior to freezing in liquid nitrogen, and sometimes they break themselves free, and you can see almost like a fossil-like structure in the adhesive where this tail end broke free. Here are the caudal lobes of the Aerophyid. Note that they've been contracted and pulled down inside the body. So these can be pulled completely inside the body or completely expanded into big rounded lobes. And now I have some work from Radmila Petanovic in Serbia about laying eggs in Aerophyoidea. And she used a couple of mites there, but Epitrimeris gibbosus was one. And this is a drawing of a very similar species, Phyllocoptes calirubi, which questionable whether it's Phyllocoptes or Epitrimeris, but Kiefer in his early presentation or illustrations would superimpose underneath the drawing of the genitalia the internal genital apodemes, spermatheci down here, and the genital apodeme, which is attached to a muscle on the dorsal shield that we looked at a few moments ago. And this is, I use software to subtract the internal genitalia from the rest of the mite to show what that same drawing, what it would look like. And I rotated it for a reason, because I have another slide coming up where we can see this structure here, which I call the gonopore. This is going to split apart. It's going to divide one way to the right, one way to the left. These are the spermatheci. And the spermatophores or spermatozoa are stored in one of these, not both, in most species of Aerophyoids, which is interesting. And this is a photograph by Dr. Schwa. Did I get that right, Dr. Hong? Dr. Hong is here from China in the front row. And he and I have worked quite a few times on different topics on Aerophyoid mites. But I think this is really a quite excellent micrograph. If I can get the mouse to come up. These are the spermatheci, but look at the detail of the chitinous material right at the mouth of the spermatheca. And this mouth will attach to this genital opening. And up here is a genital apodeme, and then there are lateral apodemes where muscles attach. And these are variable from one species to another. This is a photograph by Enrico Di Lillo. Enrico is right here in the center. And this is an egg inside of a female. And the question is, was this an egg that just prior to being laid? Or possibly is this an old female, and she's just too old, like I'm getting old, and just can't push that egg out the aperture? This is a photograph that Radmila took of the opening into the genitalia. Here is a cover flap bent forward. And then what I did was, if I can handle these things, the arrows show attachments to apodemes opening up the gonopore. Back here is the attachment of the spermatheci, and it's awfully hard to see exactly where the structure of the spermatheci are, but they're either here, they might be these larger forms that we see in the background. And then these are the mouth openings into the spermatheci, the spermathecal tubes. And then the next image is like that. And what I do is I toggle these back and forth to try to visualize with and without labels what the structure is. Here is an egg being laid, and this is the first SEM I've seen of an Aerophyoid mite laying an egg. And this one is Epitrimeris gibbosus, and this next one is Triceticus species from Juniperus communis. And its egg is quite a bit elongate compared to the other species. This one is Phytophthidae. This one is Aerophyidae, two different families. Now, a friend of mine in Hungary, Geza Ripka, published a paper this year describing, with other authors, describing a new genus Adventochorus, and based on seedy that arise from what he thought was a subcapitulum. And I've got this image here. This was the basic image that he sent me to work with. And what I did is I put labels on this image and what I think these are. Instead of being subcapitular CD, these are moved CD, the CETA-1B, which is typically found on coxa plate number one. And then I've got another image without the labels, and we can go back and forth on these. Note that the genu here, and also the genu over, I'm going back and forth from two screens. This genu back here, and this genu here, have very strong striations, typical for this species of mite. So going back and forth, you can see that those CD are probably CD1B. And then I have this photograph from Dr. Zhua in China. XUA is how he spells his name, but they don't pronounce it that way. A very excellent micrograph, but it shows coxa 1 extending up this way and a flange, a little bit of a flange up here. The arrow indicates a flange. Black arrows on this side, white on this side. And here's CETA-1B, very far up. The subcapitulum is underneath this flange that goes far forward. And then this is drawings of the mite, showing the original drawing, the subcapitular CD. And then this is what is really happening. This flange comes all the way up, covering the subcapitulum, and CETA-1B is far advanced. Something to do with its development on this particular bamboo, special species of bamboo. And Everett Lindquist sent me an email this summer, and he says, the rationale I presented on the first two pages of his chapter on eternal morphology apply to this case. Aerophyoids have very reduced hypotrichous complete complement of body CD. As these CD are all present beginning the first active post-embryonic instar, they are regarded to be fundamental and elements of the original or primitive set of larval CD. That the aerophyid stock, having undergone considerable reduction in size and other structures, would develop some CD de novo, out of nowhere, as secondary derived CD present, beginning with the first post-embryonic instar, is implausible and not found in any other group. Instead, it is most plausible, parsimonious, that the CD remaining on aerophyid mites have assumed modified positions that reflect the highly specialized body shape of these mites and the niches to which they are adapted. And that's Everett's conclusion. And what I have here are the stylet sheath on aerophyid mites, which are nicely seen in scanning electron microscopy. They're practically invisible with a light microscope. But SS is the stylet sheath. I'm sorry about that thing going backwards. These are CD on the pedipalps, right pedipalp, left pedipalp. This is EP, this is CETA D, and this is a stylet sheath up above the CETA EP, and this is down below at the level of this segment. And this is a side view of a mite, trochanter coxa, or the basic coxa of the pedipalp, the femur genu, a fused segment, the tibia, the tarsus. Here's CETA V back here. Enrico has done some work on that. That CETA V is able to detect chemicals on the plant. And I think it may also have other functions, but that work needs to be done. What is interesting in these micrographs is you see two spurs, I think, are derived from the chelicerae. And I saw those also in micrographs by Sharni Kramer in South Africa. And Enrico was kind enough to give us permission to use his images from his work on mouthparts of aerophyoidea. And this is one of his images showing the pedipalp over here on the left, the chelicera dividing into digitus mobilis, digitus fixus, and palp stylus over here on the right, and then a trans or cut section through all of these stylets showing their arrangement. For such very, very tiny little mites, their mouthparts are incredibly complex. And we're not, I know myself, I'm not sure that I'm getting everything right when I try to label these things. Enrico has done an awful lot of work with Dr. Nuzzacci, Giorgio Nuzzacci in Italy. Here's the stylet sheath. It's kind of the topic that we're using right now. Saliva is right here in these two images. And then this is a section, three part of the mouth parts. And here is a dorsal view of the stylets. And then what I want to do is try this one. And I click this. Isn't that a nice mobile graphic showing how the stylets penetrate into an epidermal cell and the source of the saliva over here? Thank you, Enrico, for that nice, very nice presentation. And here's another SEM shot. I noted that the stylet sheath always has the left portion covering over the right portion. And here you see it again. Here's the clistera down here. The horns are in this area. The left stylet sheath always covers over the right stylet sheath. So I think the two together make a pretty good seal to keep the fluids within the mouth parts. And here are feeding activity micrographs of Vase area tosicella, wheat curl mite. We are trying to see if we can determine whether there's one or more species that are presently included under Acaria tosicella. And this is a very difficult group to work with. They're not simple to separate. But this is the surface of wheat. Okay, surface of wheat. Here's the mouth parts of the female. I'm not going to say much about this. You can download it and read it. But the mouth parts are pushing these wax flakes up into a ball. I call it B for ball. And I'm using my finger on my screen, and that's not going to help a bit. That's B for ball right there. They actually push these up. And this helps to see the saliva a little bit better. Right there. This is the saliva. And Enrico was saying maybe it's a mixture of sap from the plant and saliva, not pure saliva. We're not sure about that. Here is a stoma on the wheat leaf. All of these are wax flakes. Look how the impodia have pulled the wax flakes back as this mite has struggled to gain a better purchase. And this is a higher mag resolution of that. Here's one feeding. Or after feeding, the mouth parts have been extended out forward like so. But here's the ball pushed up by the end of the nathosoma. Collected, and you'll see that a lot of times on the wheat curl mites attached to the mouth parts. And this is another female, pedipalps and horizontal pronathus feeding attitude. And here's a female looking at it from the ventral surface. Legs may have been folded during preparation. Note how the subcapitulum is inflated during feeding. So this was removed from its feeding activity. Here is the subcapitulum, and it's inflated, possibly to give it better support while it is pushing the stylets into the cell. And here are the stylets emerging, and I have a close-up of that. And Enrico and I today tried to figure out what they are. We think this is the digitus mobilis, this little tiny one. These are either the calicery or they may be the subcapitular stylets. This might be saliva here or it might be ice. This is the stylet sheath down below. And here is a pair of images showing the feeding attitudes of mites after the mites have left. There's where the saliva was. That's where the feeding hole is. Here's a feeding hole in the saliva. Here's a feeding hole in the saliva. And I indicated the position of the mites. It's kind of interesting. The SEM can give us a lot of very interesting information. The next section is on spermatophores. This is a mite arching its opisthosoma. It might be trying to pick up a spermatophore. Here is a spermatophore in high view. George Oldfield, I'm not sure, is he here 2 minutes? I better hurry up. Look at the seams on the spermatophore. This is picked up by the female, and I think those seams split open like a touch-me-not seed pod. And out go the spermatozoa. More spermatophores and the liquid that's down here. This might be a liquid from the genital accessory glands. And then this is a mite that is producing a spermatophore. Ron picked that off the leaf, turned it up on its back, and here it is. There's the stalk of the spermatophore. Here's the spermatophore beginning to emerge. We believe that when this is fully emerged, the entire male genitalia exert out of the body. Inside, you can see a lot of different apodemes, very interesting apodemes. This is the male genitalia. Philip and I are working on this. Philip colorized this for me. we're trying to figure out what all these parts are, what they should be called for good descriptions. Here's the eugenital ceti. These little tiny ceti are in the center. This is the tubercle of the ceta. This is some kind of a bulbous apodema in between. And here is a female emerging from its skin, and here's a male that's come down on top of this. This is a guarding male, and we see this often in many areophyid mites. Look how transparent the nymphal skin is. Look how the solanidia are touching the female's body, also the solanidia of the pedipalp. Enrico pointed that out. There are chemical stimuli contacting, going from the female nymph to the male. And that's the last one. Did I make it on time? 20 minutes? 66 slides. I'm done. That's the last one. I can go back to that. Now you are clapping for Enrico and for Philip and for all the others that have helped put this together. And Raul and I are working on a new genus on Mount Hibiscus down in Texas. That's really exciting, Raul. And questions? Yes, sir.
Follow up on a question earlier today.
I think it's mostly gustatory, but your basic tasting is sweet and salt, sour. But I think they can also pick up specific chemicals from host plants that they know they're on poison ivy when they're not on some other host. Yes, Enrico, you're part of this. Yes. Very tiny pores right at the very tip.
Tiny, tiny pores is a sort of system of small slits. So the solanidia is different kind of present of our mass. So could this be supposed to be a gustatory function more than a olfactory function?
Okay, that's a very interesting observation. Are there other questions? We have many things to learn about these incredibly tiny little creatures, just like Tarsonemids. They're both tiny.
Yeah.